If you think gangs are glamorous and cool, be prepared to be disappointed, because the only cool gang members that I've ever known were on ice in the morgue. And if you think you're too smart to be imprisoned, just bear this in mind. You don't have to be caught doing anything to be sent to jail. The very fact that you're associating with criminals could mean you end up dead or you spend the rest of your life behind bars.
You know, in the long run, I spent 10 year sentences I did, and without the other little bit, so about 26 years imprisonment I was sentenced to, and I'd done about 16 years altogether. So, I mean, it's not a thing I recommend to anybody. You know, there's all them birthdays, Christmases and New Year's, and when you land in the nick, that's not a nice time to be in the shovel.
Well, I think my dad had done over 40 years in jail, and I'd done about 25 years. I think Patrick's done at least 16 or something. Frank's done nearly more or less the same. We've done a lot of bird between us all. They know how to put us away, that's for sure. But if you're in this game, you've got to expect the consequences, you know, of it, of your problems, of your actions.
I wouldn't advise you to do what I've done, because I've gone through a lot of pain. You know, the beatings, the stabbings, the shootings, and the arrests, the jail sentences. It's not worth it in the end.
Because I've been banged up most of my life, you know what I mean? Fair as a young boy, right through to an adult, you know what I mean? It's not a life for anybody. Anybody that's in prison, they'll tell you. The time starts at 9 o'clock at night when the door shuts, when a prison cell shuts. And most people know, think, prison, or they've got computers, they've got this, they've got that, TVs, but no, there's a lot of lonely nights spent in there.
One man who's suffered more than most is Aaron Coughlin.
If I was watching a programme called Faces, or reading a book called Faces, the first thing that spins to my mind is, why is this person being involved if he's not a criminal or in some way involved with criminality? However, to me, a face is someone who's become notorious by hook or crook, you know, be it his own fault or not his own fault. You know, some people are born notorious, some people achieve notoriety, others have it thrust upon them. I've had it put on me from a young age by the police, because maybe they viewed me as an easy target. But what forum do I have to set the record straight? You know, apart from a programme like this, which is, you know, you've taken an interest because of the notoriety that I've mentioned. It's by virtue of that I've got the platform, if you like, in order to try and counter it.
In 1994, Coughlin was arrested and charged with the murder of Chris Little, a notorious Stockport villain. Little had been shot in the head as he sat at traffic lights behind the wheel of his car. At the time of his arrest, Coughlin accepts that he had been involved in nothing more than relatively minor car crime.
There was an absolute evidential vacuum in the early stages of that investigation. Of course, the pressure's on him. So who do they go for? Somebody who sticks out like a sore thumb, somebody who maybe is an easy target because he's involved in some way in criminality, because that seems a common theme with how the police do things as well. So yeah, they wrote me in. The description of the people, I think one was a black guy, one was a 45-year-old guy. And there I was, skinny young man.
Coughlin eventually stood trial for the murder, but was acquitted.
Yeah, the problem is, Bernie, after they've been exposed, what are they supposed to say? Are they supposed to say, yeah, we are corrupt police officers. Yeah, we did concoct stories and concoct evidence to try and cover our own inadequacy. Is that what they're supposed to do? Or is it more likely of people of their calibre that they say, oh, he's slippery, he's too clever, is this Teflon Don? What are we poor police officers supposed to do? It's all so difficult for us. Well, what you're supposed to do is be straight. And when you don't, you undermine everything. Therein lies the problem.
In 2002, the police arrested Coughlin and charged him with the murder of a drug dealer named David Barnshaw, who'd been kidnapped, forced to drink petrol and burnt alive.
A guy was kidnapped and taken away, and he was killed. And that was a terrible thing. the original witnesses, and some of them independent, were giving all manner of descriptions and what happened and all the rest of it. And again, almost to ignore all that and just try and get me at all costs in some way involved. One minute they wanted me to actually be there and try and suggest that somebody heard one word uttered and that that could have been my voice. Then when they realised that actually I was somewhere else, they tried to make out like I may have been orchestrating matters and all the rest of it. It was just really, really shocking. If you understood that case or you read the ruling, there was all manner of evidence against other people. There was no evidence against us. There was DNA on other people, no DNA on us. It wasn't rocket science, any of it. But I think one of the clearest indications of their mindset, this get Coughlan at all costs mindset, was a document that I found from one of the senior investigators. And what had happened is one of the original witnesses had said they'd seen a guy in a baseball cap and he was either black or Asian. It was dark, they weren't sure. And they found a baseball cap at the scene. That baseball cap was found to have a black man's hair in it. And a message must have come into the incident room from one of the officers saying, what do we do about this? Shall I send it off for DNA, for testing or whatever else? And the senior officer sent a memo back and it said, no need, all our suspects are white. Wow.
The case collapsed and yet again Coughlan walked free. Coughlan's problems with the police were far from over. One evening, he was approached on the street by two undercover officers.
I was approached on a dark back street by two guys, one at least as big as me. I'm 6'4". He was at least as big as me, a bit wider. Dark clothing on, ridge inside his coat, never a good sign. And a black guy that I fought at the minute with him. They didn't identify themselves even when asked. And just the whole demeanour, you know, they looked aggressive, they looked like they were up for it, they approached me. Yeah, there was no doubt in my mind at that time that they had malicious intent towards me. So I defended myself. They both got hit. They both ended up on the floor. And only then did I realise, when they were crying down the radios, that they were police. I did a run off like anybody else would once that was realised? No. I stood on and I stayed there because I didn't do anything wrong. So when the other police came, it was me who actually shouted them down the road because they'd gone to the wrong place. Not that that's like the police. So I shouted them down the road and they actually ran at the two police officers first because of the way they were dressed and the way they looked, thinking they were the culprits. They were right. They then pointed at me and I was arrested and all the rest of it. So in anything that involves me, you can always rely on the police for one thing. They'll lie. It's just a standard. In this one, a great big whopper came forth, which was, in the long run, amusing. At the time, scary, again, to be in a situation where somebody's looking you right in the eye and lying directly to you. And I remember it, we're on the interview, and he said, these police officers were wearing overt body armour with police emblazoned across the front. I said, oh, emblazoned? You mean like Vegas? You mean I couldn't miss it? So just so I've got this right, what you're saying is, no matter what the verbals were, the visuals were such that I must have known they were police officers. Is that what you're saying? And he went, that is what I'm saying. I went, good, good. Because in a world of modern technology, where we like to make sure the police are safe, and all police stations are CCTV'd up for their safety at public expense, you won't mind while I have a coffee with my lawyer, just nipping off. You can download it these days. No big long tapes. Download it, we'll wait here for you, and then we can clear all this mess up, can't we? Because they'll be coming out on CCTV, and they'll have this overt body armour on with police emblazoned. Oh, they won't, will they? Because they're lying, aren't they? I'll wait here for you, officer. He starts all out, this is my interview, and all the rest of it. And at that point, and rightly so, he was dismissed. It also transpired in that case that the SIO, that's the senior investigating officer in the case, was the right-hand man of the guy who had tried to stitch me up in the previous case, who the judge had slaughtered, he'd had to retire, and all the rest of it. It turns out this was his right-hand man, and yet in interview, I was assured that they were aware of the problems I'd had before with Stockport Police, and that they were independent and seconded in it from outside the area to, quote, preserve the integrity of this inquiry. Nice. So it then turns out that it was this guy's right-hand man who was the SIO in the case. So he must have told them to say that to me in interview, mustn't he? Because that's what they do. They sit upstairs, they decide what they're going to say in interview, and then they come down and they pitch it. So the actual formula of words that was used to me was given to the officer who pitched it by the SIO. That's just what I've come to expect. When it all eventually came out, obviously the camera evidence, this is the most simple lie, the whopper that I referred to earlier. When it all came out, they were on camera walking out with hoodies, dark clothing, and I think it was a film years ago, Crocodile Dundee, and there was a guy in it who walked and dropped one leg as he walked, Delroy Brown. That's what they looked like. You couldn't have looked more like hoodie rats if you tried. Maybe that's the look they were going for. But it certainly wasn't police emblazoned across the front, was it?
In February 2010, Coughlin was once again arrested for murder after a well-known Manchester villain, Stephen Akinyemi, was found dead in Coughlin's bathroom.
There was a dispute between two people. That dispute was over a nickname, made all the more ridiculous by the fact that there was no confusion. One was black and one was white. I wasn't confused. But they were both my friends. And whether they're confused or not, if I can assist a friend to try and resolve something, then I'm gonna. I'd arranged a meeting at my home. My missus and small child were there. The black party was there. The white party was due to come. The whole rhetoric of the fella who was there was such that that wasn't the day for the meeting. You know, that he was getting heated about it and all the rest of it. So I just thought, better we deal with this another day. So I said, leave it to me, I'll speak to him. We'll sort it out, be no problem. My missus left at that point with my daughter and went to the gym, kid in the creche, all that. He seemed to change at that point, asked to use the bathroom, went to the bathroom and then showered me up. I thought he'd missed the fact that the light's on the outside of the bathroom. And that's why he was showering, because he couldn't find the light or something. As I came level with the bathroom door, it seems he's prepared himself. He's got a gun out, a little James Bond-esque thing, little thing with a silencer on, and demanded that I get the other guy there. To add impetus to his request, he's then punched me in the face, thinking that maybe because he's got the gun, there won't be much of a response. And maybe if I thought about it, there wouldn't have been. However, immediate reaction was to hit him back. And a struggle ensued from there, whereby I ended up getting him around the head, pushing the gun away from myself. Gun's gone off in that initial melee. Luckily, that's it, the tiles are not me. Always a bonus. And whilst I've got him in that thing, he's trying to make sure the gun's not coming at me and trying to restrain his use of it. He's managed to pull a knife out, which showed forensically later that he got it out of his back pocket. And He's managed to stab me in the jaw, which has cut down into the neck, in the sternum, in the arm and in the hand. And during that, the gun's gone off a couple of times and he's fell away. I've not realised where he's been shot. It turns out he's caught him in the head. I rang the police. The police came and duly arrested me. Even though the man had a gun, a knife, a bulletproof vest, had left his car offside, his phone's offside, so he wouldn't be cell-sighted there. And from the way the police were after it and their actions after it, it seemed to me, even at the time, that they had knowledge of his intent and the way he was coming. Later, as the evidence unfolded, that came out to be true. They did know it was coming, sat across the road and watched the whole thing unfold. And when I survive, instead of giving me a medal, maybe, for not getting the other guy there at gunpoint, brass band, no, they arrested me and put me on that high-risk category remand again. Nice. So if it had been anybody else in the country, they'd have been defending themselves. There are people that hear about every day in the papers, they're using their own weapons to defend themselves. Are they languishing on remand for, you know, five, nearly 6 months like I was? Getting charges like that laid at the door? No. So the way the police operate with me is different than the way they operate with other people.
Before the trial, forensic evidence came to light that proved his innocence.
There was the dead guy's DNA, non-blood, on the bullet cartridge, consistent with him having loaded it. Not disclosed to me for 5.5 months. The paint that was on the hole that he made in my shirt as he stabbed me in the chest, little fragments of paint. It turns out that paint matched the knife. The paint on the knife matched a room in his house. That's like CSI Miami, isn't it? And you think to yourself, well, they can't be really stitching you up then if all that evidence came out. But therein lies the problem. That evidence didn't come out. That evidence was suppressed for nearly 5 months. It's difficult, even with the bentest of police officers, to get every single person all in a big circle to lie for you. I mean, they do quite good at it. But they can't hold it down forever. You know, actually, if you push, 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 and you stand on, eventually you should get to the truth. So when it all comes out in the wash, they knew that the gun was down to him. They could positively link him to the bullets and the gun. They could positively link him to the knife and left me on remand for all that time. It then comes out that they knew there was a meeting. They knew that there was a dispute between those two people. They knew that I was mediating it. They're watching all parties because they want to see what's going to happen. There is an allegation made against him during a 2-week period prior to this incident of armed rape. Somebody reports him for armed rape in the lead up to that. So whilst he's on surveillance, whilst they're watching me, watching him, and watching the other party who was in dispute with him, he rapes a girl at knife point. The police admitted that they knew it was him, that the suspect was identified, and that there was sufficient evidence to charge him. They didn't arrest him, they didn't preserve the crime scene, they did nothing. And why? Because they wanted to leave an armed rapist at large with a gun and a knife, because they wanted to see what was going to happen to me. They sat across the road and watched him come into my home. And when I win, I then get arrested. Against that backdrop, I then get arrested. Really.
After Coughlin was cleared, the press began calling him the Teflon Don, a title he neither recognises nor wants. Despite not being convicted of any charge, he spent 5 years in prison on remand, awaiting the various trials that he's faced.
So after all what's happened, Aaron, you know, you must have a pretty dim view of the police.
Well, you know what it is? Any right-thinking person has got to accept that you need the police. They're important, public safety, all that. They're obvious points, but they're real points. The problem is, you know, when a few of them start the behaviour that's been exhibited in my cases, and just a few more beginning to join in that kind of behaviour, it's all going to go wrong, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's important that they're brought to book, you know, legitimately brought to book, laid bare, so that the people who do the job properly, they'll look at that and it might encourage them to stay on the right course, might it?
So you're saying generally you haven't got a problem with the police?
Oh, absolutely not. Listen, you couldn't sit there and reasonably say all police are bent. They're not. There's plenty of them who do a great job, isn't there? It's obvious.
In 1984, Joe Steele was sentenced to life imprisonment for 6 murders during Glasgow's ice cream wars. He spent 18 years behind bars before evidence emerged which proved that he was in fact innocent. Throughout his sentence, Joe escaped from custody numerous times to stage protests to highlight the injustice of his case. On one occasion, he superglued himself to the gates of Buckingham Palace.
I always knew I was going to escape and protest, and we're trying to find ways of drawing attention to the public, highlight it. And I think it was my brother John that says, what about Buckingham Palace? I said, what about it? What about super gluing? I know people have handcuffed me. What about super gluing yourself to Buckingham Palace gates? And I thought it was nuts, because I know how to deal with royalty. You don't go to court, because you can't take royalty to court. So I was more fear of getting nutted half and putting up army cane. But anyway, I went ahead with it. I've actually got photos of the Queen looking out a wee window up the top of Buckingham Palace. And a security one, a couple come down, one says she wants to know what it's all about, meaning the protest, what it was about, etc.
The Queen wants to know why you were there.
The Queen wanted to know why I was on her gates, super glued to her gates. So I'm shouting, the herbs were shouting, tell her I'm innocent and I'm missing that. So I think it was after about 5-6 hours, the wee police woman that was on the gate, duty, whatever, she said they tried everything, all sort of household goods and things like that.
What, to get your hands off the
gate? To get my hands off the gate, aye. But this time they blocked me in with a fire brigade, fire engine, police car, police vans and whatever, and blocked the roads off for the press, whatever, but people still get by and we're taking photos and things like that. And
What were the tourists doing?
There were a lot of Japanese, Chinese people. They were cuddling me, and I don't know what they thought was happening, to be honest. There's me stretched out the gate, super glued, with a Salvador Dali T-shirt, and people come up taking photos and cuddling me and all that. So I don't really know what they made there, what they thought, this tourist thing. But after 6 hours, a wee police woman said to me, do you want me to try this, Joe? She had nail varnish remover. And we were worried about my hands were getting numb anyway, and it was scorching, splitting the trees. So she put this stuff on my fingers and started slowly peeling it, and it came, it was about 6 hours, and then it came off, taking me through to Charing Cross Police Station.
Supporters of the two men who've been protesting their innocence for 14 years cheered as Joseph Steele and Thomas Campbell were put into the van that would take them back to prison.
Joe's protest outside Buckingham Palace resulted in his case being reviewed, and he was eventually freed in 2004.
I never deserved what I went through. I never deserved 18 years of my life taken off me for a family, ruining a family's life. I'd done to David, wiped my whole family out. Kids, ass. They'll never know what I went through in my head. Even to this day, they'll never know what I'm going through. You know what I mean? Bad charge. Bad case altogether. Hell of a bad case. I've seen the boy jump to the window, the boy Doyle. He's a taxi driver. I've seen him a few times, and I would imagine he's seen me. As far as I know, there's no animosity. Does he blame me for his family? I may be wrong. I've been dealt with this with people that know the guy and going well with him. But I'm saying to myself, my whole family's wiped out. Nobody's in prison for it. I think the family will still obviously hurting, but I think I'd love to see justice. I'd love to see whoever done it, the Doyle family, go to prison. But I can't see it happening. Too many people have died, too many lies have been told, too many mistakes made. So the police are never going to charge anybody else.
Despite what the press say, prison is not all Xboxes, TVs and gourmet meals. Armed robber Vic Dark was sentenced to 10 years inside, much of it spent as a double Cat A prisoner.
I'll tell you what happens, what really f***s me off, right? You get all these idiots in these Cat C jails saying about it's an holiday camp, it's this, it's that, we've got this, we've got that. Not for Category A's. Category A's are like a different class. You're banged up, you can't go to work, you're banged up 23 hours a day. I spent out of 10 years, I spent probably 5 years in segregation units, banged up 23 hours a day, which literally tests your humanity. You're escorted everywhere. I was escorted in. You know, if I sat there and told a normal person I went to court with a bin armoured van, bomb-proof armoured van, three police cars in front, three police cars behind, strip searched, they come in, my cell's tested every day for gunpowder. they've got a thing called DST, dedicated search teams, and obviously the category A's are sectioned off and dug out all the time for security. You span all the time, you moved all the time. As soon as you land in the prison, you can't say, I'm going to stay here, because you're a double A cat. You get moved straight away. You know, if they fancy you for anything, straight down to segregation, good order and discipline. So going into these sort of, you hear these knobs on prison, on in papers saying about they're sitting here, they're sunbathing, they're doing this and doing that. You know, you're lucky to see a bit of sun. I never see no trees or plants. All I see was steel and concrete for 10 years. You see so many people killing themselves in jails. It's horrendous. I mean, like, you bang a human being up for 23 hours a day, for year in, year out, in special units, and you see their sanity. But the bit that hurts me more than anything, the screws get off on it.
Yeah.
And that's the bit that hurts you. And someone goes, I've got acquitted. I remember the night I went back after I got acquitted in Winchester, I got back and the screw went, oh, he's just cut himself up. He never done a good job, did he? I looked at him, I thought, that's a f***ing human being, mate. And then when I woke up in the morning to get released, someone took a drug overdose. And the same thing, screw turns around and goes, never done a good job, did he? Took an overdose, never. He's still alive, isn't he? And I thought, hold on, mate, he's a human being. And I thought, who's the animal, me or them?
Yeah.
And it's true, isn't it? Because they hate you.
Like all high-profile prisoners, since his release, Vic Dark has remained under the watchful eye of the police.
You know, you've got to be careful what you say in your car, you've got to be careful what you say in your house, you've got to be careful all the conspiracies or people fitting you up, you know, and that's what it's about. It's still hard going. I mean, my house is like a fortress, I mean, because they've made me like that, paranoid, you know. But the technology today, which people don't understand, it's so far they can listen to anything now, especially mobile phones. They are literally bugs, and people, especially young kids, don't understand that.
In April 2012, 35 armed police officers in full tactical gear raided Vic's home.
Every morning without fail, I wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning. And I woke up, and Bob's your uncle, quarter to five. I realised, I see this police marked car go past. Then I thought I was seeing things. I see a big sprinter with armed police on top, a big green sprinter with police on top of it. I thought, what the f*** was that? And then all of a sudden, an armoured vehicle spread up, and then I see them all jumping out the back like they're doing a rock. And I was really more annoyed, really, because I ain't doing nothing. That's what really upset me more than anything, because I ain't doing nothing. I'm trying to lead a straight life, and I'm still getting loads of hassle from the police.
Newcastle villain Paddy Conroy also spent time as a double Cat A prisoner. It's an extremely dangerous environment, reserved only for the most high-profile inmates. Whilst in Whitemoor prison, an attempt was made on his life.
Second time I've been at Whitemoor this. And I was just writing a letter on my cell, and he was the door with a big spike. I didn't realise it was a spike at first. I thought he'd hit us with a hammer. I didn't know that hard. And he hit us right in the head with it, and I knocked my head off. And it wasn't until after that I realised it was a spike, and he was raining it, doing on us. And I just hit him. I ended up bashing him around every cell, every wall in the cell. I did. This whole cell got smashed up. And he was on the floor unconscious when the schools heard the cell getting smashed up and they come along. But I still had a hold of him. I had a hold of the hand with the spike in. When he was lying there still, I didn't know why. I just didn't let go of it. During the whole fight, I just kept a hold of it, you know what I mean? So even when the schools come in and he was lying on the floor unconscious, I still had a hold of his hand with the they were sitting in the attacker, and there was nothing I could do. They just took me both away, put me down the hospital. There was a small hole in my head, but it hadn't penetrated my skull. It just sort of put an indentation in my skull. But I broke my skull before when I was younger, and it's much thicker there where the spike landed. And it sort of, there's nothing I could really do, but it was only small, round, but it went through the halfway through the bone. Next morning, I was put doing the block. The one that had done it was already doing that pottle. So I knew what they would be. They charged me with assault on him as well ahead, because I wouldn't answer any questions. And they wanted me to go and explain. Well, obviously, it's part of your defence. I knew what they'd be, to explain what had happened, just to get out of my own charges, but I wouldn't do that. I tell you that, Bernie. I just went in and pled guilty to assault and pottle. And they just all shook their f***ing heads when I'd done that. The governors and screws, and asked us to leave the room again. The reason I'd done that was because I would have to put pottle in it for what he'd done. You know, I wasn't even going to drop pottle in it. I wasn't not the prison governor, so he would get in trouble. So they just sent me back with the room. They got Popple back in, and he ended up getting 14 days for being possession of it, because he still had the knife in his hand when he was sort of arrested off the screws, as evidence. He had the knife, so he ended up getting 14 days doing the block for that. But he didn't get any charges for assaulting us or anything. They were dropped when he went back in. Then they called me back in the office, and they went, right, we're just thinking about it. I just consider myself a very, very righteous man, right? And if I'm right, I ain't budging. Doesn't matter what. Who they are, what they are. Well, it doesn't matter. I'm not budging if I think I'm right. I keep my conscience clear through righteousness in my mind and with my way of life. And I've got this reputation and that, but I still have a normal life. And in my normal life, I don't do anything bad to anybody. I'll I'm going to do what I've got to. Trouble comes my way. I never got nothing with trouble.
What do you think the police are trying to achieve in it?
At the moment, I think they're just wrapping it. I think it's not just me, I think it's everybody in the country. I think they're going to wrap all up, all the big old villains from old, and I think there's going to be big swoops against me shortly by this new National Crime Agency that's opening. British version of the FBI. They're collecting the intelligence in on me now. They've been working on it all the way for quite a long time. They've admitted this. And they haven't opened the doors yet. That's what I'm expecting.
But what would you want? You know, that's what they want, is to lock everyone up. But what outcome would you want? You know,
I'd just like to be left alone. But they don't think that's the case. I think I'm caught in the history of everything myself.
Another man trapped in time is Paul Massey, who believes the police will never allow him to move on. Like Vic Dark and Paddy Conroy, his home is routinely raided in an attempt to disrupt his life.
The police come to the house and told me that I was getting killed. Said Louise was getting killed. They said your son and my daughter was getting killed. And they gave us an Osborne warning and left. Then not long after, the door come crashing in at the front of the house and the door come crashing in at the back of the house. I've jumped up to grab something, and before I know it, guys are running through the doors with balaclavas on and overalls. And I thought, it's a hit, you know, because there's no shouting police or anything like that. Next minute, I'm tied up, and then they're shouting, police, you're under arrest for money laundering. And that's when I was relieved, because I really thought I was getting took out. Then we was taken to the police station, and then I was interviewed, which can give you the tape. It's the most utter crap I've ever been arrested for. And I was released, and when I got home, I found out that my girlfriend had been tied up naked in the bed by 8 guys with balaclavas on and overalls. My daughter, who's 14, she was dragged out of bed with no clothes on. And I've got my son, who's 21, he was tied up and took him for threats to call on the police. He's never even been in trouble in his life, my son. All the charges have been dropped on my son. And then they done my girlfriend with disturbing the peace in bed.
Disturbing the peace in
the
bed?
Yeah, while she's in bed, yeah. The police have brought this new firm of police in, heavy-handed police. They're not from Salford. It's not Salford police. It's outside police. And it's the Operation Golf and Soccer. And they've come in and, like I said, they terrorised my house. Tried to terrorise me, it wasn't going to ever do anyway. And then They beat a lot of my friends up on the estate, where they got a kid the other week. About 15 people have heard have been beaten up by the police heavy-handed, where they're jumping out with balaclavas, overalls on, and dishing really heavy-handed treatment out to them people for unnecessary. The people walking down the road with a tracksuit or whatever, they look like they're one of the lads. They're jumping out and they're giving them a beating. I've had people beating through in the bushes. They got the kid the other week where they smashed him all over, saying we're the new gangsters around here now and all this crap. Now, I thought these were supposed to be police officers. Now, you're going to bring police officers into Salford, heavy-handed and heavy tactic like that, you're going to lose the respect that they've got. They haven't got much anyway. You understand? They haven't got much respect around here, especially in Salford. And they need to report these officers that are being heavy-handed, the straight officers, and flush them out. Then you might get the respect back from the people of Salford. Because we all accept from Salford that if we go out and commit a crime and we get arrested, we'll accept it and go to jail and face the consequences. No issue with that. But the way the police are behaving at the moment, I've never seen it in my lifetime, even in the 80s, when there was no human rights or anything. I've never seen police tactics like today.
The police are taking a tough line on organised crime across the country. A new FBI-style task force called SOCCER has been set up to target high-profile criminals and disrupt their activities. With substantial resources and the latest surveillance technology, they're smashing gangs throughout the UK. Some villains see the operation as harassment, but Glasgow face Paul Ferris was one of the first to see the writing on the wall.
I read the depositions while I was on remand, and I just kept going through witness A, witness B, witness C. No names attached to them, but it was the whole series of things that they had was this is security services, 25 years, security services, 10 years. And I couldn't believe some of the things where they've actually got me in a phone box and knew what numbers had dialed. And that's when I kind of realised, people coin a phrase, look the game's up. I kind of looked at it in disbelief and thought, I never, in my wildest dreams, thought I would come to the attention of these people. And when you do come to the attention of these people, you're never off the radar. So there's a decision that was made very early on, before I was even convicted, that there is absolutely no way of taking these people on. If you want to take them on, it's a big risk. You're playing a big cat and mouse game because of the technical proficiency that these people have got, the human resources at their disposal. And I made a conscious decision that I'm going to get my head down, whatever the sentence I'm going to get, I'm going to do it, do all the courses and go out. So there was no great kind of inspiration when the doors opened in Franklin Prison at 2002 on January 21st. For me to announce to the press that I was going straight. You know, it wasn't a kind of immediate inspiration. I had 4 years, 8 months to think about it. And the 4 years, 8 months was something which I said then, which is now 11 years ago. I've been straight now. For anybody that's wanting to go down and travel a road and organise crime or to get involved in whatever, things that they see as an easy, fast buck. There's always somebody bigger and better out there. There's always somebody wanting to take you out. There's always somebody wanting to betray you. And there's always people that are jealous of you. But most importantly, the technical proficiency that the law enforcement agencies have got now is far superior to what I was reading way back then. So the message about that lifestyle. It's glamorous when you're in it, I mean, you're getting your money and all the rest of it, but when you realise how much that it impacts on your own family and yourself, you know, you spend the biggest part of your years. I've spent 13 years in and out of prison since I was 16, and there's no glamour in that. I'm currently involved in looking at repeat offending issues and hopefully offering voluntary things about that. We need magic wand. Nobody's got magic wand to say, look, the crime's going to stop overnight. But people should always remember there's bigger and bigger gangsters than are on the street. They're actually in the House of Lords. They're MPs, they're politicians, they're chief constables. These are the guy that's controlling things. And funnily enough, when you look at the biggest cause of drug deaths in the UK for heroin overdose is a combination of heroin and methadone. And then when they get the heroin, they find out it came from Afghanistan, which is quite funny in a sense, that an occupied country with 95% purity lands in the UK. So government agencies are bigger drug dealers than most people. Government agencies are bigger robbers than most people. And we just need to look at the collapse of the banking institutions to realise how these hedge funds have got absolutely no concern whatsoever for people that have been putting their pensions away for their retirement. So the whole question is, who is real villains? Who is the faces behind the organised crime?
Faces today are fighting a war on two fronts. On one hand, ruthless police tactics are isolating and destroying firms across Britain. And on the other, the use of heroin and crack cocaine has stripped gang members of respect, loyalty and trust. The vast amounts of money that can be made dealing in hard drugs has resulted in the rule book being torn up. There's only one true governor today, and that's the gun, which is being carried by every no-hoper with enough hard cash to rent or purchase one. That's why most of the old school have wiped their mouths, conceded that villainy is a lost cause, and walked away to live out the rest of their lives in peace.
Well, you know your time has come, and you're sorry for what you've done. You should have never been playing with a gun in those complicated shadows.